Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Hope everybody is well. A pleasure to welcome Nechama Price. We haven't had the pleasure of learning her for, I don't know, 6 months more, since back in May, I believe, when she gave a talk on the on the Shvatim. And since then, this is her book, her recent book on the 12 tribes of Israel. Nechama, besides the author, is the director of the GPATH program at Stern Graduate Program in Advanced Talmud Study for Women. I think that's the official name. And she teaches at Stern, and she is a Yoetzet Halacha working in New Jersey. So Yoetzet Halacha, and it's a pleasure to welcome her back. And Bakasha Nechama.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to share screen. So the source sheet will be in front of you, as well as it's shared in the chat, I believe, as well. I'm just making sure I can see you. Okay. Okay. Very exciting for me to be with you guys tonight and learning about the Parsha. You know, I have been wondering about this topic for a very long time. It's bothered me for a very long time, because I think that we would all agree, when we look through all the stories of the Torah, and just in general, we have a perspective that there's justice. We have a perspective that most of the time, you know, people who do bad things are punished. And at the end of the day, good guys, good things hopefully come their way. If you look through the stories of the Torah, you know, you see that. Oh, did I? Hold on. I paused. I apologize. Somehow I paused it. So that shared screen.
No, everything was fine.
No, it said it on my.
It was fine.
Yeah, you sure? Okay.
It was fine before. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. No, my screen was flashing that I paused it. I don't know what I did. But, you know, in Tanakh, just think about the stories that Cain, right? Cain kills his brother. He does something clearly very evil, thinking he's going to inherit everything. And then what happens? He doesn't inherit anything, right? Shade is born. Shade takes over. He has to wander around the world. And at the end, according to Chazal, he's murdered by his own descendants. Or you have someone like Lot, who leaves Avraham behind. And then at the end, he kind of loses everything. His own daughters rape him. You know, he doesn't end up becoming part of Am Yisrael. Esav is another one. He has to leave Eretz Yisrael at the end. He doesn't get the bracha. And in the Chazal, in the Midrash, his head gets chopped off by either Yehuda or Dan. You know, it's a humorous ending to his story. Paro and the Mitzrim, of course, they drown in the Yamsuf, or at least for sure the Mitzrim do. My favorite, Datan and Aviram, they get swallowed up by the ground in one of the coolest stories. Bilam gets killed in the war against Midian. You know, for the most part, the stories really do seem to fit a theme that bad guys, sometime at the end, something bad comes their way. So too, when it comes to good guys, you know, Noah, Ish Sadiq, and he's saved from the flood. Avraham goes through a lot of difficulties, a lot of tests, but at the very end, he gets to get remarried a third time. He has 6 more children. The psukim tell us, Hashem beirach et Avraham bakol, he's blessed with everything. Yosef has a really hard time, but at the end, he's second to power in Mitzrayim, ends up saving the world, reunites with his family, and so on and so forth. Go through the stories of Tanakh. We certainly have a belief that you can have a good guy who does something wrong. And when he does something wrong, there's a penalty for what he does that's wrong. Famous example is, of course, the story of David HaMelech. David HaMelech, who takes a married woman, Bathsheba, and ends up getting her husband killed. The Gemara may rationalize and change the sin to make it smaller, but at the end of the day, the punishment is clear in the text. The baby that Bathsheba is pregnant with dies. His oldest son gets killed after raping one of his daughters. And, you know, all these terrible, tragic stories that he has amongst all of his children. And very often, we even say about tzaddikim, the greater you are, the worse you get punished, right? Hashem judges tzaddikim kachuta. He judges them even more harshly, which is why when we get to the question of why is Moshe Rabbeinu not allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael? Did he hit the rock? Was he say something too harsh? Right? The sin seems kind of small and the punishment really so large. And it's because he's such a tzaddik, so God judges him even more harshly. So that's why when we get to Aaron in this week's Parsha, it really blows our mind. And we just don't understand, because I think we would all agree Aaron's a good guy, right? Aaron's a really great guy, right? He's a great character. And therefore, he should fall into the categories of what we were just discussing. But if we look at this week's Parsha, it seems very clear. Aaron builds the golden calf that is worshipped by the Jewish people. The people who worship it die, and everybody seems to be punished really harshly. And Aaron doesn't seem to be punished at all. Aaron seems to walk away completely unscathed. And if we look at the psukim, I'm going to start now with my source sheet. Hopefully, if you cannot see my arrow moving now, then I'm doing something wrong, but hopefully you are. I see nodding. Good. Source number one. Moshe blames Aaron. Vayomer Moshe l'Aaron, Ma asa lecha ha'am hazeh ki aveit alav chata gedola. What did this nation do to you that you brought upon them such a great sin? Moshe blames Aaron for building the egel and for the story. Not only does Moshe blame Aaron, God seems to blame Aaron. Vayigof Hashem et ha'am al asher asu et ha'egel asher asa Aaron, source number two. God gets so mad at the Jewish people for the egel that what? That Aaron made. And we see insight about this in Devarim as well in source three. Uba Aaron hitanaf Hashem ma'od lahashmido. God was so angry at Aaron, he wanted to destroy him. So here's my question. Aaron built the egel. Moshe blames Aaron. God's mad at Aaron. Where's the punishment? Where's the punishment to Aaron? Not only that, Aaron seems to get a promotion. If you look at source number four, we know that Aaron has chosen his family to be the Kohanim and him to be the Kohen Gadol. They are chosen out of all of Bnei Israel to be the Kohanim and him the Kohen Gadol. Now, Rashi's interpretation of this, now what happened in Shmuel Chav Chet, so that's earlier than this week's Parsha, but Rashi says, Ein Mukdam Lachar B'Torah. Guess what? Cheta Egel happened first. The Mishkan happened afterwards, even though that's not the order of the Psukim. And therefore, Masa Egel Kodem Letziva Melechas HaMishkan. Egel happened before they were commanded for the Mishkan, which would mean, according to Rashi, Aaron gets picked after Cheta Egel. It like blows your mind. He causes the sin, and then not only does he not get punished, he gets this huge promotion. Now, if I go according to the Pshat and the order of the text, as does Ramban here in source number six, Ramban says, no, the Mishkan was commanded before Cheta Egel because it was part of the ideal, right? We were supposed to have the Mishkan to be able to connect to God. So by Matan Torah, after the Shechina of Hashem comes down, it's then going to go straight into the Mishkan, says the Ramban here in source six. V'lachein tziva tchila al devar ha-mishkan. The Mishkan came first. And therefore, Aaron was chosen before Cheta Egel. Fantastic. However, still, after Cheta Egel, if he's not going to get killed, he's not going to get punished, at least take away the role of being the Kohen Gadol, at least demote him, at least say, okay, now you don't deserve to have this tremendous, tremendous honor. But as we know, he does not get demoted. And not only does he not get demoted, in Bamidbar Yudzayin and source seven, in the rebellion of Korach, where they're debating, why is Aaron getting the role of Kohen Gadol? God defends Aaron, because as we know, they all give him the stick. And what happens to Aaron's stick? Bene parach mata Aaron, his stick blossoms. And therefore it shows that he's the chosen one. So it seems that Aaron gets to keep this job as Kohen Gadol, even after the story of Cheta Egel. Doesn't seem very fair. Doesn't seem very just. So the first thing I want to do with you is go to source number eight, and let's look at the story of Cheta Egel, which is in this week's Parsha, and try to see what exactly did Aaron do? What is it that we're saying Aaron did wrong that he doesn't seem to get punished for? So maybe I could understand a little bit better why he doesn't seem to be punished. So if I look at the Psukim in source number eight, let's go through them together. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe laredet b'nahar. The people see Moshe has not come down Har Sinai. They're getting very nervous. Their leader is no longer there. What are they supposed to do? How are they going to connect to Hashem? Ve'ikahel ha'am al Aaron. So they gather up to Aaron. So Aaron doesn't start this. They come to him. They come to Aaron with a problem. And they say to Aaron, this is their idea. Vayomru elav kum aseh lanu elohim asher yochul lefanenu, ki zeh Moshe ish asher alanu me'eretz Mitzrayim lo yadani mahayalo. Come, you have to make for us an Elohim, a God, something. Because that guy Moshe that took us out of Mitzrayim, we don't know where he is. We don't know what to do. I can understand in this moment, Aaron was probably filled with tremendous panic, because deep inside he knows Moshe's coming back down. Deep inside he knows that everything's going to be okay, but he doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know what to say to these people. He doesn't know how to calm them down. So when it seems very clear, instead of saying to them, no, just wait, he's coming. He doesn't go that route. Instead, he tries a different tactic. He does a delay tactic. And he says, you know what? Let me push them off for a little bit. What's probably going on in his head? If I push them off for a little bit, Moshe will come and it'll all be solved. So I don't have to worry about it. So what does he say? Pasuk bet. Vayomer lehem Aaron. Perkunis mehazahava sherbaz nein shechem ubenechem ubenotechem veviwela. Why don't you go get some jewelry, but not your jewelry? Go get your wife's jewelry, your son's jewelry, your daughter's jewelry, and bring it to me. What's he probably assuming? They're not going to give it. Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. I'll give you all my jewels. No, it'll take them a while. He'll bide some time. Everything's going to be okay. Uh-oh, it doesn't go that way. They take out their own jewelry. They say, here, Aaron, we got plenty of jewelry. Here, I don't have to go to my wife. I don't have to go to my sons and my daughters and ask them for jewelry. Here, I'm just going to give you mine. But I feel Aaron. Uh-oh, Aaron's in a panic again. This happened too quickly. So what does he do? Delay tactic number two, pasuk dalet. By yikach miyadam, he takes it. Like, now what? By yitzarato becheret, by seum igal masecha. He fashions it with a graving tool. You could see Aaron going, I'm going to make the slowest possible egel I could make. I'm going to fashion it. I'm going to scrape it until it's perfect. I'm waiting. Moshe's got to come. Please, Moshe, please come. As he's like sitting there slowly fashioning this. And then, of course, still, egel's now made. Nothing's going on. Moshe didn't show up. Vayomru, they say, not him, they say, Ela Elohecha Yisrael Shaluchem Eretz Mitzrayim. Oh, this is the God, whatever that means, that took us out of Mitzrayim. And Aaron's now in a bigger panic. Vayaron, we're in trouble. So okay, delay some more. Vayaven in singular, Mizbeach Lefanav. It looks like he is building this Mizbeach. Okay, I'm going to keep building stuff. Hopefully Moshe's going to come. And then last, Vayikra Aaron, Vayomer, and he finally says, okay, guys, Chag LaHashem Machar. Tomorrow, let's wait another day. But he also corrects them. It's LaHashem, guys. It's LaHashem. Not to this egel. We're not making a party to the egel. It's to Hashem. But of course, what happens the next morning, Moshe still doesn't come. Vayishkimim v'machra v'alu olot v'yagishu shlamim v'yashev am l'chol v'yashatu v'yakim l'sachek. They go and they worship the egel. Aaron is not included in this pasuk. So when I look through the psukim, I understand a little bit better why Aaron isn't given the same punishment as everybody else, because what he does here is very different. He doesn't sin. He doesn't want to build this egel. He does not want to worship this egel. He doesn't believe in this egel. He is just trying to push off the people and therefore trying to lead them on this path of waiting and waiting and hoping that Moshe will come. And therefore, what do we blame him for? I read this pasuk already, but not to see it in the context. It's the egel asher asa Aaron, for making it. Not for worshiping it, not for calling it Elohim, you know, it's he made it. And therefore, you know, he is to blame, but to blame very different. Okay, but I'm still looking at this story and saying the obvious question, which is, Aaron, why didn't you get up and say, no, I will not build you an egel. No, you may not worship another god. No, you will wait for Moshe. Why did Aaron not do that? So Chazal comes to the rescue of Aaron to try to explain to us why he didn't feel he could do that. And in order to claim that, they actually come to solve another mystery. If you look at source number 9, it's one of those mysteries that we have in the text of Torah. I give a shir on the disappearing acts of people in the Torah. One of these characters is this guy named Hor. Hor shows up in two places in Shemos and then disappears, okay? And we don't hear from him again. And if you look at the two stories here in source number 9, we have the first story, which is the war against Amalek, right? When we're fighting against Amalek. So we all know Moshe goes up on the mountain. Yoshua's fighting below, and Moshe's holding his hands up, and as he's holding his hands up, we're winning. Well, the pasuk tells me Moshe needed some help to hold up his hands. So on one side of Moshe is Aaron, and on the other side of Moshe is this guy named Hor. Hor, who is known to be the son of Kalev, Shevet Yehuda, Hor is holding up the other hands of Moshe. Beautiful. Seems to be a leader at that time, right? We have Yoshua, we have Aaron, we have Hor, all these secondary leaders in the time of Moshe. We hear about Hor again a second time at Matan Torah. In Shmos Parach Avdalet, I'm still in source number 9. When Moshe is going up on Har Sinai, he knows that there needs to be somebody in charge when he's up talking to God for 40 days and 40 nights. So he gives them direction and he says, Hine Aaron v'chur imachem, mi bal devar mi gashalem. You have any problems, go to Aaron, go to Hor. Okay, problem hits. Moshe doesn't come down. Chet ha'egel occurs. Who do the Jewish people go to? To Aaron. So what's the question? Where's Hor? What happened to Hor? So comes Chazal to answer both of these questions in one beautiful answer. Source number 10, look at our pasuk, Vayar Aaron. And then what does he do? He builds the Mizbeach and he says, Chag LaHashem Machar. And in that, it's like, what did he see that made him not say no? No, I won't let you do this. Says Rashi, quoting the Medrash in Vayikra Rabba, he saw a lot of things. There's a story that's implied in the text. The people first went to Hor, and Hor said to them, no way. He said the answer we wanted Aaron to say. No, you may not build the Egel. And what did they do? They killed him. So what does Aaron now see? That they killed Hor. So there's two possibilities what to take from this. Either we see two different forms of leadership, Hor who's stronger, Aaron who's a little weaker. So Hor is the one who stands up to them, and Aaron is the one who's trying to kind of, you know, passively try to stop them from doing it, but doesn't stand up in the same way as Hor. Or I understand Aaron, because Aaron is reacting based on what happened to Hor. Hor said, no, they murdered him. So Aaron says, what good is it for me to say no? They'll murder me too. And then they'll have no leader and they'll do whatever they want. Better that I try to direct them in the right direction rather than to say no. So when I look at this answer that's being given to me by Chazal, I see that what they're trying to do is rationalize for me Aaron to make me understand why Aaron did what he did. To analyze this even further, I wanted to make a parallel for you that I thought was really strong within the Psukim to another story, which is pretty similar to this one. We have the story of a shofet by the name of Gidon. Gidon helps fight against the nation of Midian. He's successful. Everything is wonderful. Everything is great. And then at the end of the story, the people come to him. I'm in Shoftim Parachaf. You see in source 11, I have them next to each other. You see the similarities. And they come to Gidon and they say, Mashal Banim, we need leadership. We need some sort of guidance. Can you lead us? You and then your children should lead us. Similar to what's going on here by Aaron, where the people see Moshe's gone, and therefore what they're really asking for is another form of leadership, another way to reach God, another way to have somebody to guide them on this path, because Moshe, who was our leader, he seems to be gone. So we need a form of leadership. Just like Aaron, who answers them, give me your jewelry, so too, that's exactly what Gidon says to them after saying, no, I will not be your leader, but instead, I'm going to build you a monument. I'm going to build you something. And what does he build? In Pasach of Dalet, he says to them, Tenuli ish nezem shlalo, kinizmei zahav lahem, he asked them for their jewelry. And this is all the different loot that they got from the nation that they conquered, and he's gathering up all of this loot and putting it together. And just like Aaron, who uses it to build an Egel Masecha, here Gidon does, he built for them, Pasuch of Zayin, Vayasoto, he built it himself in a ephod, something that, again, reminds us of Aaron, a ephod that is worn by a Kohen Gadol. And of course, what happens at the end of the story, just like by Aaron, they end up doing Avodah Zarah, Vayilu Alo Vayishu Shlamim. The end of the story of Gidon, Vayiznu Kol Yisrael Acharav, they start worshiping the ephod as Avodah Zarah. And in that story as well, there are a lot of questions that are asked by the Mefarshim. Do we blame Gidon? Is Gidon to blame for building this ephod that causes the Jewish people to return to Avodah Zarah? And if you look at some of the Mefarshim there, if you look at source 12, Radak says, you know what? I can understand why Gidon did it. Sheyel lezikaron hatshuah gedola. He wanted them to remember this crazy victory that they just had. Hu asau talatova, like he had good intentions. You were supposed to look at it and think about God. You weren't supposed to look at it and worship it. You were supposed to remember the victory that God did for you. Or says Ralbag, I'll do where I bolded. Lahaskir ha-nesazeh. It was something to build so that we looked at it and we said, thank you, Hashem, for what you've done for us. Or the Dot Mikra source 13 a little bit differently. It's not just to look at, but it was actually to use to talk to Hashem. It was a way to communicate, like in a ephod of the Kohen Gadol. Sheshamesh machshir lidros Elokim. He says, oh, you want a connection to God? Here, I'm going to build you something so you can actually talk to God through it. You could communicate to God through it. Where I bolded at the end, kedei l'shalba Hashem, to use it to ask God questions. Achrei shezacha legilui shchina chafetz bekerbat Elokim tamid. You just had gilui shchina. God just came down. He just helped us win this battle. So now you want it all the time. So I'm building you something to kind of help you to get closer to God. I could look at Aaron as trying to build something to help them to connect to God, not something to worship, but rather something that he thought maybe would help them in this time as they're looking for a way to connect to God, and they end up using it to worship. So again, just like I questioned by Gidon, was he right? Was he wrong? Do we blame him? I can question that about Aaron too. However, on the other hand, no matter how much I'm questioning him here, I still feel like there's some blame. There's some responsibility that Aaron should be taking for this action. And my question gets even stronger because there's a second story. And the second story skips us now forward to, somehow I lost the 14, source 14 in Bamidbar Yudbeth, which is the story of Lashon Hara, of Miriam and Aaron. We know the story, Miriam and Aaron get together and they're talking about Moshe, about this Isha Kushit. And no one has any idea who this Isha Kushit is, but that has nothing to do with our shir for today. But when we look at that story, you know what's also interesting? Skip to Pasuk Yud for a minute and then we're going to go back. At the end of the story, they speak Lashon Hara, Hashem gets mad at them, calls them into the Ol Moed, and then Pasuk Yud. Bahanan sar me'al ha'oed, right? The cloud now goes away. Hashem goes away. Bine Miriam etzaras kashalek. Miriam has saras. Ba'yifan aral Miriam, and he looks at Miriam and he says, oh, look, he named it saras. She's got saras. Guess who didn't have saras? Aaron. Guess who didn't get punished again? Aaron. So here I'm like, what's going on? Two times. And Aaron doesn't seem to be punished at all. So again, I look at the story and I say, okay, let me look at it again. Let me see within the story if I could understand why Aaron isn't punished and Miriam is. And the first thing I see when I look at source 14, it's interesting language. Vatidaber Miriam va'Aaron. A few important things. First of all, the word vatidaber is in singular and it's also in feminine form. And she spoke. Clearly, it's referring to Miriam. I skip down from coming back to 14 in a second, go to 15. We have this phenomenon in other places where two people are doing an action, but it's written in singular. And it shows us that the first person is really the active one. And the second one is kind of the follower. A second example of this is in the story of Noah, when Noah is drunk after they're saved from the Mabul, and he gets drunk and Ham comes in and laughs at him. And then Shem and Yafet come in and they cover their father. And in that story, Pasuk Chaf Gimel here in source 15, Vayikach Shem V'Yafet. It should be Vayikhu, should be in plural, but it's in singular. And therefore, the Mefarshim I'll bring down, I gave it to you here in Rashi, Ein Ketiv Kan Vayikhu Ela Vayikach. Why is it not in plural, but rather it's in singular? Laman Al Shem Shenitamatz B'Mitzvah Yoter Me'Yafet. To teach me, Shem really did the mitzvah. He was the active one, and Yafet's kind of the follower. Shem did it more than Yafet, which therefore, of course, fits very nicely that in the Psukim right afterwards, Shame is blessed first, and shame is blessed stronger because his action was better than that of Yafet. I give you another great example, which is a feminine one, just like ours. But Tashar Devorah Vibarak, right? And Devorah and Barak sing a Shira, which we all call Shira Devorah, because again, Vatashar is singular feminine. And Radak there says the Pshat is Lefisha Devorah Ikar Hamasek Kamo Vatidaber Mirim Va'aron, because she's the significant one. She's the one really doing the singing, and compares it to my story, just like the story of Vatidaber Mirim. So beautiful. So I already see that this is really Miriam's action and Aaron's along for the ride. And I point out even further the order of their names. Miriam's name coming before Aaron. If you look within this story, their names are listed two more times and always Aaron's names come first. Vayikra Aaron u'Miriam shnehem. And in Pasuk Dalet, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Normally the names go in order of significance. So the fact that in Pasuk Aleph, Miriam's name is first and it's in singular feminine, certainly that's telling me that Miriam is the active person here. And therefore I could argue Aaron was just listening to her and Aaron was just kind of along for the ride of Miriam's discussion. However, I'm still going to argue that Aaron can't be innocent. Pasuk bet, vayomru, it's in plural. They both say, ach b'moshe diber Hashem, halogam banu. Doesn't God also speak to us? That's in plural. God yells at Aaron and Miriam, makes both of them go to the Ol Moed for the yelling that Aaron, that they're about to get for the tochacha. And in Pasuk Tet, Vayichar af Hashem bam. Hashem is mad at both of them. So clearly this is not something alone that Miriam is doing. And after she's punished, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Aaron pleads with Moshe, please forgive us. We both sinned. Even Aaron is admitting that he did part of this sin. And therefore, it really starts to, again, make me ask this question of, yes, either Aaron joined in after Miriam, so she's more to blame. Or Aaron was listening and shtika kada dami, so since, you know, he was silent, it's as if he's agreeing, so it's as if he said it. Okay, but still, no punishment to Aaron now twice. What's going on when it comes to Aaron? How do we understand this phenomenon that happens in this week's Parsha? So I would like to give you two very different types of answers. Answer number one is everything I just said was wrong. And yes, he was punished. He absolutely was punished. I just got to look a little bit deeper to find the punishment of Aaron. And we're going to look for four different ways to see that being true. The second answer that we're going to do is he was not punished. That is correct. My premise is correct. And then we have to understand why. So let's start with answer number one, which is absolutely he was punished. And if we're going to say he was punished, I got to look a little bit harder to try to find the punishment because I just read you the psukim and it didn't seem to think or it didn't seem to show any punishment whatsoever. So I'd like to start by answering this question by introducing a fact that we all know about Aaron. If you look at source 16, the Mishnah in Avos tells us something about Aaron, which we all just take for granted, which is Hillel Amar, Havei Mitamidav Shel Aaron, Ohev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. What is something that we know about Aaron? What is the trait of Aaron that he passes down to his students? He loved peace. He chased after peace. Ohev Et Habrios U'Mekarvan LaTorah. He loved people. He loved bringing them close to the Torah. This was who Aaron was. He was a lover of people. Okay, so now if I take a step back and think about what happened to Aaron in both of these stories, maybe now I can see a first possibility of a punishment to Aaron. We just said Aaron didn't do the act of the Avera, but rather kind of to some extent stood passively by letting other people do an Avera, right? Fitting this theme of Ohev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom. They want to do Chetekel. I'm not going to argue with them. I'm not going to get into a fight with them, right? I'm just going to kind of try as hard as I can to push them in the right direction and then sadly watch as they do something wrong. Or Miriam, I'm not going to yell at her. Don't say that about Moshe. I'm just going to kind of stand by watching her do this and it, almost as if I'm joining in, right? It's kind of like I'm passively allowing them to do the sin. So what is the punishment to Aaron? It's mamish mida keneged mida. You didn't stand up to them and cause like a little bit of a fight to stop them from doing this thing. So guess what your punishment is? You have to stand there and watch them suffer. Somebody who's a people person, to watch those around him suffer because of him, he could have stopped them and he didn't. And now he has to feel the guilt of watching the results of what he could have stopped and he didn't. That's a killer to someone who's a Ohev Shalom and a Rodev Shalom. If you look at source 16 here, I quote you from our Parsha, what happens after Chet HaEgel? Moshe screams out, Mila Hashem Eli, who joins B'nai Levi? So that's the family of Aaron, right? His own tribe. And they go out, v'hergu ish et achiv, ish et re'ev, ish et krovo. He's watching members of his own tribe slaughtering all these people that he could have stopped from sinning and he didn't. He's watching them die. And how many people die? Kishlosh es alefim ish, like 3,000 people. And he's like, oh my goodness, that was all because of me. And in the story of Miriam, you actually see that exact idea hinted in the Pesukim. You ever wonder, Pasuk Yod seems really repetitive. The Pasuk says, he named Miriam Mitzaras Kishalik. Done. What is the rest of this Pasuk? Vayif and Aaron et Miriam, he named Mitzaras. He turned and saw that she had Tzaras. In my opinion, the first half of the Pasuk is her punishment. Second half of the Pasuk is his punishment. She got Tzaras. And you know what his punishment was? He watched her have Tzaras. He saw her pain and suffering, and he suffers for it. He screams out to Moshe, not her, please forgive us. I can't stand this. Our sister is suffering because of something I could have stopped her from doing, and I didn't stop her. The punishment, or again, possibly number one of the punishment of Aaron, is really mida keneged mida. Because you didn't stand up to these people to stop them from sinning, you didn't really do the sin, but you didn't stop them. So now you have to watch them suffer for the sin that they did. And for someone like Aaron, who's Ohev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom, that's a punishment that is just beyond all punishments. That is possibility punishment number one. Possibility number two is a really famous and amazing Abarbanel that I happen to love very much. And Abarbanel states the punishment of Aaron is actually so fitting of Aaron and is so perfect. And it's right there in the Psukim. You just missed it. Well, what happens to the people who did Chet HaEgel? The people who did Chet HaEgel, they die. Right? They're killed. And what is the result of that? Yes, they die in the desert. They cannot go into Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's the punishment. Well, does Aaron go into Eretz Yisrael? No. Does Aaron die in the desert? Yes. So does he get the same punishment? Yeah. almost the same, but slightly different. Look at Abarbanel. This is the Abarbanel on the discussion of the story of Moshe hitting the rock. And we all know that Moshe hitting the rock or talking to, you know, when he was supposed to talk to it or hit it twice or whatever it is, the sin of that is just so incredibly confusing. And no one really knows what he did wrong. And the Abarbanel there has an incredible thesis because part of the problem there is Aaron also gets punished and Aaron didn't do anything in the Pesukim. So it makes no sense that Aaron's punished. Says the Abarbanel, Moshe and Aaron are actually punished that they can't go into Eretz Israel, having nothing to do with this story. It has to do with the fact that they did earlier sins. Moshe had to do with the Chet Maraglim and Aaron for Chet HaEgel. And that's why they are punished at the very end of their lives, that they cannot go into Eretz Israel. Look at the Abarbanel on the side with me and really feel the amazingness of this Abarbanel. Source 17. V'dati bazeh, she'moshe v'aron shnehem na'adshu b'avor avonot she'asu. Really? In May Meriva, they're not being punished for hitting a rock. That's not it. They're being punished for sins of the past. Im aron ba'avon ha'egel, ve'im Moshe adoneinu inyan ha'meraglim. Aaron is being punished for the sin of Egel and Moshe for the sin or his involvement in Meraglim by asking them questions and kind of pushing them in the wrong direction. But we're focusing on Aaron. Lo shaya Aaron me'ovdei ha'egel v'lo shaya Moshe midor ha'meraglim chalila ha'merasha. We're not saying Aaron served the Egel and we're not saying Moshe was one of the people who was saying bad things about Eretz Yisrael. No, for sure not. He didn't mean to. He didn't have bad intentions when he made the egel, like we just discussed. He really was just trying to delay them. And try to lead them in a very nice, comforting way. He didn't want to scream at them, right? Oba Moshe, he knew Moshe was going to come. But you know what? But what happened, happened. And they end up serving the egel. So Aaron is to blame. Lachain, hayame ha-mishpat haloki she-kemoshe Aaron sivev anashim ha-hema she-yamutu ba-midbar ve-lo yichnesu la-eretz. Just like because of Aaron, the people now that serve the egel, they die in the midbar. They don't go into Eretz Yisrael. Aaron got the same punishment. He also dies in the midbar and doesn't go into Eretz Yisrael. However, because his sin is different, he didn't worship the egel, but rather he just built it. He doesn't get punished right away with them. God extended his anger and kills him in year 40. So Aaron is punished the same as them, but just later he gets to live till the end of the midbar and dies at the end of the story. So Abarbanel comes to tell us, you're totally wrong. My entire theory is all wrong. My question is wrong, really. Of course Aaron is punished and Aaron gets the same punishment as everyone, just not at the same time. So it's not confused with the fact that he didn't worship the egel. He just is blamed for building it. So we have two answers so far. Answer number one, his punishment occurs immediately. It's within the story. And it's the fact that he has to watch others suffer. And for a person like Aaron, that's a tremendous punishment. Answer number two, he's punished later. Look later in the stories of Aaron, and we see a punishment. He doesn't get to go into Eretz Yisrael. I want to combine answers one and two and say, maybe I could say the punishment, and this is answer number three, the punishment is watching other people suffer because of him. And just like in answer number two, the punishment is found in a later story having to do with Aaron. It's not found right away after the story of Chet HaEgel. So I look to a later story of people that are punished surrounding Aaron, having to do with Aaron, which could be looked at as a punishment to Aaron for Chet HaEgel. And of course, what do I see in source 18? Another one of those very difficult stories to understand, which is the story of the death of his two older sons, Nadav and Avihu. We're at the story of the Chanukas HaMishkan. We've just built the Mishkan. So after Chet HaEgel, we've built the Mishkan and we're all excited. We are having a major party. And what do we all know happens? Nadav and Avihu, they give an Esh Zara, they give a Ketoret. What exactly they do wrong? Also very unclear in the Pesukim, but the fire comes down, Vayamutu Lifnei Hashem, source 18, and they get killed. And what does the story tell us? Vayidom Aaron. He's standing there quietly. He's watching it happen. He's suffering once again. Here, somebody around him, someone he loves, is being punished, And there's nothing he can do. He just stands and he watches. And you wonder, is this similar to the idea of Eli HaKohen that we have, that his sons, Hophni and Pinchas, are bad, and they do bad things within the Mishkan, and they get killed, and the blame is actually put on Eli. Hashem says to him, Veloki Habam, you didn't rebuke them. Is there something here that we're rebuking Aaron? Aaron, who didn't put the right values in his sons, Nadav and Avihu, because that's his personality. He doesn't like to stand up to people. He doesn't like to tell them when they're doing something wrong. And here, Nadav and Avihu do something. And again, what it is a shiur unto itself, which I'm happy to give. Nadav and Avihu, there's so many possibilities of what they do wrong. But here we see Aaron standing by and watching them get killed, the same experience once again. But the connection between the two stories is incredibly intense, because the language that is used at Har Sinai, which of course happens right before Chet HaEgel, right? Har Sinai is this ultimate event, which is ruined by Chet HaEgel. Chanukas HaMishkan is this ultimate experience of the Shechina coming into the Mishkan, which is ruined by the death of Nadav and Avihu. Very parallel stories, and the language is incredibly parallel. If you look at source 19 and 20 and 21, 22, I paralleled them for you so you could see it. In source 19, when we're talking about Har Sinai, we have Vayichas Hanan et Tahar. The Shechina comes down. The cloud covers the mountain. Vayishkon Kavod Hashem al Har Sinai. His kavod, his honor, dwells on Har Sinai with the language of Vayishkon. We have that same language by the Mishkan in the same story when God comes down into the Mishkan. Vayichasa ananet oel moed. Again, the covering of the cloud, kavod Hashem maleyat ha-Mishkan, and his kavod comes inside. And two more psukim, v'shachanti b'tocham, v'shachanti. That's what he's doing. He's dwelling amongst us in the Mishkan. The same language as Har Sinai, the same language as the Mishkan. But even more so, source 20, how does he come down at Har Sinai? He's ke'esh ochelet. He comes down like a fire. In eating fire, how does he come down at the Mishkan? Be'esh tiyeh belayla. There's a fire at night in the Mishkan. God comes down in the same way. He comes down in anan. He comes down in a fire. He's shachan. He dwells amongst us, says the Ramban. So Mishkan, who I'm in source 20, Shiyu kavod asher shachan al Har Sinai, shachin alav benistar. That same Shechina that came down Har Sinai, that now remains amongst us in the Mishkan. It's a continuation story. Har Sinai is continued into the Mishkan. Not only that, source 21, we see the same rules by both of them. At Har Sinai, we had to have the people surround Har Sinai, but stay back. They had to stay back. They can't come too close. And of course, who gets to come close? Moshe gets to go close. By the Mishkan also, it's the people. They have to stay back. They stand around, and Aaron and Moshe are able to come to the Ohel Moed. And again, in source 22, we have at Har Sinai itself, Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, who go up on the mountain or get closest. And then, of course, Moshe goes on his own. And so too, by the Mishkan, it's Moshe, Aaron, and of course, his sons who get to go inside, who get to be closer, who get to be part of the process of the Chanukas HaMishkan. And here we go. It's beautiful. God comes down at Har Sinai. We have similar by the Mishkan, by Teitzei Ha'esh, source 23, Melifnei Hashem, Vatochal Zabizbeah. God comes down in a fire, eats up the korban. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's Chanukas HaMishkan. And what happens? The next pasuk, the fire comes down and eats up Nadav and Avihu. We have these parallel moments of these incredible moments of Gilui Shechina, of God coming down. First one ruined by Chet HaEgel, which is made by Aaron. Second one ruined by the sons of Aaron and their actions, and Aaron watching his sons get eaten up by the fire. If you don't think that shows a punishment to Aaron in some sort of way or a consequence to Aaron, I don't know what else does. And to hurt someone by hurting their children is certainly a much bigger punishment, I would think, than hurting the person themselves. But maybe I can even look further for another example of a place where Aaron seems to be punished in a future story. And this would also be after the story of Aaron and Miriam, which is source 24, the Korach story. Think about the Korach story. What are they yelling about? They're yelling about, according to most Mefarshim, there's a debate there too, that they all want to be the Kohen Gadol. How do you know? Because they could do a Ketoret test. Everybody brings a Ketoret. Well, who brings a Ketoret? And Yom Kippur is the Kohen Gadol, right? And therefore, they're trying to kind of take away Aaron's job. They're saying, Aaron, you don't get this job. Well, look at it this way. Aaron, who kind of messed up in our story of Chet HaEgel, building the Egel. And here you have the story of a whole group of people coming together, including your own cousin, saying, you don't deserve this job. This job should go to somebody else. If that's not a punishment to Aaron, I don't know what is. Because if you think about the story of Korach, Aaron never gets up to defend himself. ever. He doesn't get up to defend himself up at all. He's quiet. He's passive. He's on the side watching this take place. Moshe's defending him, but he's not doing anything. It seems to be a very direct attack against him. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Source 24, the language I just mentioned about the death of his own children is the same language that's mentioned by the death of the 250 men in the Korach story. Here again, another fire is coming out of the sky to kill a whole bunch of people all surrounding Aaron. And Aaron's just standing there watching and going, oh no, not again. What does Aaron do in the story? The only action that Aaron does in the story is try to save everyone. Here they're coming to say, throw Aaron out. And instead of fighting them, he's like, I need to save them. Source 25, he goes and he gets a ketoret and then he runs. He runs in the middle of the people because he's trying to stop the plague. He's trying to stop everyone from dying. You feel Aaron. It's like, oh my God, everyone's dying around me. What did I do? I need to stop this. And that's what Aaron is trying to do. So if I take a step back and say Aaron wasn't punished for the egg, all of a sudden I realize maybe he was really punished for the egg quite a bit over and over again. So far, what I've done is try to take away the first piece of my question. The first piece of my question was Aaron wasn't punished. It makes no sense. And I've now given you three different answers, which can all be true, of how Aaron was certainly punished. Answer number one, he was punished because he had to watch Miriam suffer. And he had to watch all the people that he didn't stop to build the eagle die. He had to watch them suffer. And that was a punishment to Aaron. Answer number two, he dies in the Midbar and doesn't get to go into Eretz Yisrael, just like the people who built the Egel. Just happens 40 years later, but he dies just like they do. He gets the same punishment. Or he gets punished later on in the stories, which remind us of the story of Chet HaEgel. He gets punished by watching the death of his two sons, or he gets punished by the fact that there's rebellion against his own leadership and people die again because of this rebellion. And he, of course, runs out to save them. But there's a fourth answer. That's another possibility of how he is punished. But in order to get there, I have to actually undo the second premise that I started with. My question when I started was, why isn't he punished? And two, why does he get a promotion to be the Kohen Gadol? Or why does he get to keep the job of being a Kohen Gadol? And in my fourth answer, maybe I want to say that the job of being a Kohen Gadol was not such a blessing. The job of being a Kohen Gadol may to some extent been part of or a piece of what he deserved as part of what went on in the story of Chet HaEgel. If you look at the language, and I only gave you a few psukim, but there's a ton, within the discussion of the job of the Kohen and the job of the Kohen Gadol in particular, there's constantly this language of do it this way, and if you don't, you won't die. If you do it this way, velo yamut. Don't go anytime you want into the Kodesh, because if you do, you're going to die. This is the only way, velo yamut, source 27. And you have to be careful when you give a ketoret to make sure you give it the right way, velo yamut, so you won't die. Everything about the job is really kind of balancing. If you're not perfect, you're going to die. What a scary job. What a scary job for Aaron. What a scary job for him to know is being passed down to his children for all generation. Every Kohen Gadol is going to be at the same risk. And we see how important this risk is. We see how scary it is. Because look at source 28. Before the discussion of the Avodat Yom HaKippurim of the Kohen Gadol, I'm reminding you, your sons died because they went a little bit out of step in the Mishkan. You better be careful as the Kohen Gadol to do exactly what you're supposed to do. And we all know that when we are davening and we are in Yom Kippur and we are going through the entire avodas of Yom Kippurim, there's a beautiful song that we sing in the middle of Musaf, which is my favorite part of Musaf, mind you. But sometimes it gets missed what's exactly going on, which is we start singing Mara Kohen. Why are we singing? Why are we so excited? Because he didn't die. Because if something went wrong along the tshuva process, you know what happened to the Kohen Gadol? He never came out. He died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And that was the end of the Kohen Gadol. So every single time the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur did his avoda, he knew there was a chance this wasn't going to go in his favor, that he was going to die. And therefore, we get so excited when he comes out alive because he didn't die. And therefore, we are forgiven. And therefore, if you think about it, is this job a bracha? Is this job a promotion, or is this job really, really scary? And therefore, it might make a tremendous amount of sense to give it to Aaron. Here's Aaron, who caused this tremendous sin of Am Yisrael. Maybe he was given the job already before, and maybe he was given it afterwards, but either way, he gets to keep this job. Because part of the job is, as I gave you here in Source 28, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the chiper ba'ado u'ba'ad beito, to get forgiveness for himself. Aaron needed forgiveness for himself. He did something very, very wrong. Here he has an opportunity to get his own forgiveness, but it's more than that. Because if you look at the story, what happens after the story of Chet HaEgel? Moshe yells at Aaron. I said that to you already. Source 29. Moshe says to Aaron, Ma salacha ma'aseh, what did you do? Well, what does Aaron say? Aaron doesn't take responsibility. Vayomer Aaron, Ayichar, please don't be upset with me. Avadoni, kibarahu. You know these people are bad. You know it's not really my fault. You know they wanted to do it. Vayomuli, they said to me, it was their idea because you didn't come down. But Amar and I said to them, do you want to give me some jewelry? I threw it in the fire. It's not my fault. So what does he have to do as the Kohen Gadol? What does he have to do at the Kohen Gadol? He has to take responsibility. He has to take responsibility for all of us, right? Every year, the Kohen Gadol is taking responsibility for every single Jew and every single sin that they have done. It's a perfect job for Aaron. It's the perfect punishment to some extent, or tikkun to some extent, fixing for Aaron of what he did wrong. He tried to give all the responsibility to the people, and now he has to take the responsibility for everyone upon himself. So maybe I could say he was totally punished. Four different answers to say Aaron was absolutely punished in a tremendous way for what happened in the story of Chet HaEgel. But I want to go to possibility number two. He was not punished. And if he's not punished, you have to say something canceled out the punishment. He certainly did something wrong, so something must have canceled out the punishment. At first, I can go back to the pasuk we did earlier in Source 30, which we had it in the very beginning, but I put it here again. Yes, Aaron hit Tanafash HaMolash Mido. God was very angry at Aaron and wanted to kill him. Moshe saying this in Dvarim. Let's palel gambad Aaron beitahi I davened for. Okay, so maybe I could say Moshe davens for you. You get forgiveness, you know, it's a very nice thing to have a gadol daven for you. And then you do get forgiven. But I think it's more than that. I don't think that's enough. But I think, okay, that's a piece. However, maybe let's take a step back. What is it about Aaron that we know that maybe could explain to me why Hashem was willing to forgive Aaron or overlook what Aaron did? And I go back to that Mishnah and Avos that I mentioned to you before. He's Ohev Shalom, Virodev Shalom. And it's always been a wonderment to me. Where do we get that from? Where do you see? Is there a story that you see Aaron taking two people and trying to have them make friends? I mean, we actually see Moshe doing that. Why are you hitting your friend, right? We don't have that about Aaron. Where did this idea come from that he's Ohev Shalom and Merodev Shalom? And I think where it comes from is the story that we first hear about Aaron when he reunites with Moshe. Because if you look at the Midrash, I understand this is Midrash, but I'll explain to you in a second how I think it's really coming from the Pshat as well in Source 31. When God says to Moshe, you're going to now go back and lead the Jewish people, here's the Midrash capturing an emotion that makes a lot of sense. Amar Moshe ad shelo amadati haya Aaron achi mitznabe lehem shmonim shana. What do you mean, me, I should lead? My brother's been leading for the last 80 years. Where is this coming from in the Midrash that Aaron was the leader? I think in the Pshat, it actually does make sense that Aaron had a major form of leadership before Moshe came along. Number one, God speaks to Aaron to tell him to go meet Moshe. So clearly he was a prophet to some extent. And when Moshe wants to meet up with all the Zakenim, Aaron could collect them in a minute. Well, I'm sorry. If I said I would like all the elders of the city to get together, no one's listening to me, right? He obviously had to be someone of tremendous significance that he could get all the Zakenim together to come listen to Moshe, right? And you see that the fact that he's with Moshe gives him credence, right? I mean, the people start to listen to Moshe because he has Aaron, and Aaron gives him that confidence. So it must be that Aaron already had the respect of the people. But here's the thing. If it's true that we take this assumption that Aaron was the leader or a form of leader of the Jewish people, well, then it's very hard for someone who is leading to allow an outsider, especially a younger brother outsider, who grew up nowhere near everyone, not suffering alongside anyone, grew up in a palace, to come in and take over. Moshe, it's captured in this Midrash, Moshe says, Amar Moshe to Hashem, Achshav ikanes ani l'tchumo shel achiv yem yatzer. I'm going to come into the tchum of my brother. I'm going to take over the leadership for my brother. You don't think that's going to be a problem? You don't think he's going to be upset? Isn't that crazy? I'm going to come in and be like, Aaron, step aside. I'm back. You know, give me the leadership.
And of course, that's a normal thing that would be the reaction of Aaron. And says Hashem, no, that's not how he's going to react. And we know from source 32, he's going to come towards, he's going to meet you, he's going to greet you, he's going to be thrilled to see you, and he's going to bring you back with him. He's going to love you, and he's going to, and that's exactly what happens. They meet, he kisses him, and he becomes his number two man. He's the mouth of Moshe. It does everything Moshe tells him to do. It's amazing. You know, it's one of those things that I always wondered, I don't know if any of you saw the movie The Prince of Egypt, but I watched it many, many years ago with my younger brother, and then I watched it again with my older kids years ago. And one of the games that I played with them when we were watching it is how many things are inaccurate to the story of Tanakh? You know, how many things can you find within this movie? It's a cartoon movie about the story of Moshe. It's normally on TV, you know, around Pesach time, so it might be on again soon. And it's a fun game to play. How many things are inaccurate? Which are Midrashim? What is Pshat that's coming through? But there is one thesis of this movie that is not found in any of the Midrashim, is not found in Pshat, like there's no source for it whatsoever. And it always bothered me, why would they put this in the movie? And what's that piece? It's Aaron's character. In the movie, The Prince of Egypt, Aaron is the mean older brother who doesn't believe that Moshe has the right to be the leader, who's really the anti-character. You know, Ramses is the brother that he loves, and Aaron is this mean older brother. And then, of course, by the end, Aaron comes to respect Moshe and this beautiful turnaround. And I was always like, why did they do that to Aaron? That makes no sense. It's totally against the psukim. And I think the answer is because that's normal. That's normal human nature. If they put in the movie, Aaron accepted him right away, people would be like, that's stupid. That can't be right. That's not human. That's not normal. But you know what? At the end of the day, the psukim tell us that is what Aaron did. It's not normal because he was such an ohev shalom v'rodev shalom. It didn't bother him that his brother stepped in and took over the leadership role, even though he didn't live with Am Yisrael for all that time. He let his brother do it. He was the older brother, and he became the second in command to his brother doing whatever he wanted. It wasn't normal. We have this very similar idea, which I gave you here in the Mishnah on Avos again in source 32 about Yonatan and David. And it's a beautiful concept that's brought up in the Mishnah on Avos, trying to explain what is ahava she'eino tluya b'davar. What is love that is not dependent on anything? What is the ultimate love? And it's the love of David and Yonatan. And what is it referring to? It's referring to the fact that Yonatan, the son, the oldest son of Shaul, he was the heir to the throne. He was supposed to take over the Malchus after Shaul. Of course, he dies in the battle, so he can't. But even before that, he turns to David and he says, I know you're supposed to be king. I know I'm not going to be king. He takes off his royal clothes and he puts them on David HaMelech. It's not normal. Most people would say, no, I'm going to fight you for it. And even Shaul turns to Yonatan and says, don't you get it? He's taking it away from you. And Yonatan says, it's okay. I love him and it's okay. It's okay for him to be the king. This is a not normal human reaction, to the extent that this is ohev shalom v'rodev shalom. This is the ultimate love of one person to another. And this is the attribute that Aaron had. And if I understand that this is the attribute that Aaron had, by the way, if you look at Shmos Rabbah, source 34, this is why he deserved to be the Kohen Gadol, says the Midrash. This pasuk, Barach v'smach libo, the fact that he was so happy to let his brother come in and take over the leadership, Halev she'samach b'gdulas achiv, the person who was happy for his younger brother to take this great power, he yilvashu urim v'tumim. He deserves to be the Kohen Gadol. But now I plug it back into the story of Chet HaEgel. Maybe Hashem understood. Because here's the issue. Everybody's probably a little bit suspicious. Aaron, the older brother, steps aside to allow his younger brother to take over. What would have happened? Moshe goes up on Har Sinai, disappears. And the people say, we're in trouble now. And Aaron swoops in and says, okay, I'll be the leader. What are all the people going to say? Oh, he's just been waiting. He's been waiting this whole time to take the leadership away from Moshe. He's just been waiting until Moshe disappeared so that he could take it back over. So Aaron says, I can't. So therefore, instead, I'm going to try to push it off. Moshe's coming. Don't worry. But he couldn't. He couldn't stand up and become their leader because he couldn't allow anyone to think that he didn't believe so strongly that Moshe was supposed to be the leader of Am Yisrael. And maybe that's where Hashem understood. Yes, it's true he built the Egel. Yes, it's true because of him building the Egel, they worshiped the Egel. And yes, it's true that he had a part in it.
But maybe I understand why he couldn't do what we wanted him to do. He couldn't stand up and tell them no, because that would have really shown everyone that his true intentions the whole time was to take over, and it certainly wasn't. So maybe therefore I could understand why God understood what Aaron did and forgave him and didn't punish him in the story. Again, this is our second thesis: Aaron was not punished. The other possibility to say why Aaron wasn't punished is, of course, the simple answer, but is also a very profound answer, which is, when do we believe people are not punished? We believe people are not punished for their sins when they do tshuva. That's what we believe. So where is the tshuva of Aaron? I don't know, because the tshuva of Aaron does not have to be mentioned in the psukim, but maybe it's hinted to within the psukim, because he becomes the Kohen Gadol. What is the ultimate job of the Kohen Gadol, right? Is to give us forgiveness on Yom Kippur. If you look at source 35, the ultimate job is for him to do the avodah, to get forgiveness, a kol avono b'nei Yisrael, that's kol p'sheihem l'chol chatosam. Well, if his job is to get forgiveness for all sins, well, who does God choose? He chooses the person who messed up, who knew how to do tshuva, to get forgiveness for his own sins. He is the perfect role model to be the Kohen Gadol, to get forgiveness for all people, for the entire Am Yisrael, for all of their sins. He's the perfect person for it. And it's captured so beautifully in the Midrash that I gave you here in Source 36, the Yalpet Shimoni. When God says, Kachat Aaron, pick Aaron for this job, Sheyab libo nitrachak bedvar egel, even though he did the egel, in that moment when God says, pick Aaron, Moshe knew Aaron did tshuva. Obviously he did tshuva, or else God would have never chosen him. And therefore, I think if we take a step back, we've now answered this question on this week's Parsha in so many different ways. We started out by saying, how is it possible that it's fair that Aaron wasn't punished? And we answered number one, yes, of course, he was punished. And we said there's four different ways possibly he was punished. It could be one, or it could be more than one of these answers are true. Either he was punished by watching the people around him, the people he loved, the people he was trying to protect, all get hurt because of his inability to stop them. The people who built the egel all get murdered right in front of his face. His sister gets saras, and he has to watch her. He has to watch her suffer. And the pasuk tells us he saw her. And then he suffered from watching her have tzaras. Or, as Abarbanel said, he wasn't able to go into Eretz Yisrael. He dies and he doesn't get to go to the ultimate place where they were heading to go. What a punishment. Or he loses his sons in a similar type of scenario as Har Sinai. We have the Chanukas HaMishkan, and it's the same scenario again. And here, Vayedom Aaron, who's quiet as he's watching his sons die, possibly, partially to, of course, what they did wrong, but also as a punishment to Aaron. Or there's a Korach rebellion against Aaron's leadership as a punishment to him. And again, here he watches more people dying because of that rebellion against him. And he has to go fight to try to get the plague to stop. Or I can even argue being the Kohen Gadol was the tikkun, was a punishment, but also a tikkun for him for the actions of being, of his actions in our parsha of Chet Ha'egel. And now he gets to get forgiveness for himself and for the Jewish people. But he puts himself in a situation of Kohen Gadol where he could die at any moment, where he's really, you know, in a very sakana, very dangerous situation, which is not necessarily looked at as such a great honor, but rather something that may be to some extent a punishment or a takana for his actions. Or I could say he was forgiven. Or I could say God didn't punish him, either because he was such a tremendous person, Ohev Shalom v'Rodev Shalom, and the way he treated Moshe. And God realized that it was really all about the fact that he didn't want to step into Moshe's shoes in that moment, which is why he did what he did. Or, of course, he does tshuva. So if I circle back, where's the justice? Where's the justice in the story? To me, the ending of this, I think, is the most significant part, because I think we all like to believe good things will happen if we're good people and bad things at the end of the day will happen to bad people. We certainly want to believe that. But I think we also want to believe very strongly as human beings who mess up, because we do, and we sin and we do the wrong things. We also want to believe that there's a way out for us, right? And because we do something wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean bad things are going to come our way. And here's a story of Chet Ha'egel, somebody who does something really wrong. Aaron, he's a good person. And he does something wrong within this week's Parsha. He does. But what happens at the end? Not the terrible ending necessarily. Maybe it's not, because he's able to do tshuva. He's able to move forward. You know, at the end of Chet Ha'egel, you could have seen an Aaron, and this might be what actually happened to Hor if Hor didn't die. It is also possible that he just stepped down from leadership. He said, wow, this is really hard. I don't want to keep going. You know, this is too hard for me. But Aaron doesn't. Aaron says, okay, I'm going to learn from this, and I'm going to continue in my role of being the leader of Am Yisrael, and I'm going to get better, and I'm going to do better, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life life getting forgiveness for Am Yisrael and trying to save Am Yisrael to make up for what I did in this week's Parsha. And therefore, I think there's a lot to learn from Aaron, certainly in terms of justice, of understanding what Aaron did. But I think for me, the take-home message, which is the strongest, is that we can all make mistakes, but it's really what we do after those mistakes. It's, do we stand up to those mistakes? Do we learn from those mistakes? Do we grow from those mistakes? And do we allow not just God to forgive us for our mistakes, but do we forgive ourselves for those mistakes and allow ourselves to move forward? Anyway, thank you very, very much for learning with me tonight. And I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm going to stop share so I could see the chat. But I hope you enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed the shiur. I think you can unmute if you want.
Thank you. There are a couple questions in the chat if you want. Otherwise, I can read them to you, but you want to take a quick look.
Okay, so I'm looking at some of them, so I'll see which ones I have. Why didn't they ask Aaron to lead them? Why did they want an eagle? It's a really great machloket on this discussion of what they wanted this eagle to be, right? Was it that they were trying to replace God in the story by making an eagle? Were they trying to replace Moshe in this story, right? And certainly in the parallel of the Gidon-Aaron parallel, it actually does sound like they were allowing Aaron the opportunity to take that form of leadership. I mean, they're saying, we don't know where Moshe is. We kind of need a new way to relate to God. We need something. Is it, again, we're making a new God, or is it that we're making a new way to reach God? So there certainly was the opportunity for Aaron to step up and say, hey, I'll take those shoes. I'll do that. And he doesn't. And again, I understand why he doesn't, because that could look bad in terms of his relationship with Moshe. But I think that your question, Irene, who's in the chat, I think it's a huge question, because it's a much bigger question of what was the goal of Chet HaEgel. Right? Was it to replace God? Was it to replace Moshe? Was it to be some sort of vehicle to, through the Egel, to talk to God, kind of like the Gidon Ephod, to talk to God, because now they have Moshe to talk to God? And the question is, if that's what they wanted, Aaron wasn't necessarily a prophet who could talk to God the same way as Moshe. So what were they trying to do? And I think based on the question of what they were trying to replace might answer your question of, would Aaron have been a good replacement or not? But certainly there was opportunity in the story for Aaron to stand up in a stronger way and take over the leadership, especially since Moshe said, while I'm gone, Aaron and Hor are in charge, so therefore turn to them. So, you know, for sure the question is, which I think is a good one, why didn't they just say, Aaron lead us? But it could be, as his relationship with God is different, they didn't think to say that, or maybe that's what they were saying, and he kind of took it in a different way by saying, no, I don't want to lead, just like by Gidon. I don't want to lead, but instead, let's build this thing instead, hoping that Moshe would come down. So I think it's a very, very good question. The next one, Aaron is the opposite of Mordechai. Okay, meaning Mordechai who pushes Esther forward. I'm not sure exactly, but if you want to speak up, the person who wrote that in the chat, and you can please add on. I would love that.
It's Mordechai says, "Hakarish tacharishi, Rebech Vatzala." In other words, Mordechai says, "You better not be quiet," and here Aaron is quiet.
Okay, but again, Mordechai doesn't do anything. He just pushes the next person to do something. So I don't know if that makes him the opposite of Aaron, but okay. I mean, certainly one can argue that Aaron, again, what I keep saying messed up is the fact that he didn't get strong enough against them. I think that's certainly what we're blaming him for in the story. Maybe had he pushed a little harder, Chet HaEgel would not have happened. The next comment, is it possible that it was Aaron's love of peace aversion to conflict that prevented him from preventing the people and Miriam from sinning? 100%. Meaning, I don't know that we would learn out, oh, hey, shalom, bro, Dave, shalom, from those stories, but I think that's exactly what I was trying to present, which is that personality of, I don't want to fight with people, I don't want to make trouble, is the reason possibly why he didn't want to fight with the people for the Egel, and he didn't want to fight with Miriam to not say Lashon Hara, but maybe that part of his personality came out negative in those stories, because he should have, right? He should have in those stories. So 100%, Harry, very, very good. He was a Maran. You want to help me, Rabbi Kelman? Rabbi Noel depicts Aaron as
I was trying to figure that one out.
Oh, okay, so if someone would like to explain that. The source sheet, so here I can...
I put it on.
You put it on. Okay, the source sheet is there. Okay, so... So 100%. So Annie said, what about the Midrash that Aaron threw the gold into the fire and it formed into the golden calf? So that fits very nicely into Aaron's version of the story, right? Aaron's version of the story is I took their jewelry and then the eagle just kind of appeared. So the Midrash is based on that, assuming that Aaron's version of the story is what happened. And therefore, Aaron's kind of being hands-offish. I didn't really do it, right? It just kind of happened. The question is, what do you do with the conflict between what's in the Psukim, in Perek Lamed Bet, in the beginning, the narrative, which makes it sound like he fashioned it, versus these Psukim, which make it sound like it just happened. And again, these are two different versions of the story. The Medrash really sides with the other one. What to do with those Psukim? You would have to say that within those Psukim, it doesn't really mean he fashioned it, but it means that the action that he took caused it to be fashioned. But it's a very hard thing to understand within that narrative. But you understand that the Midrash is coming from the perspective of trying to rationalize what Aaron did, right? Aaron for sure didn't do this terrible sin. Aaron for sure didn't build the Egel, right? It must have just happened. And within that Midrash, there's blame that's put on the Erev Rav in the story, right? The Erev Rav, they knew magic. And therefore, because they knew magic, and when he says the people are bad, he wasn't actually talking about the Jewish people. He was talking about the Erev Rav. The Erev Rav, through their magic, made the Egel take place. So that's all part of the Midrash's desire to take the blame away from Aaron and put the blame on somebody else. And who's the greatest scapegoat? Erev Rav. We blame them for like everything in the Midbar. Them or Datan Vaviram are blamed for everything in the Midbar, right? So again, what's the goal of that Midrash, which is happens very often to Tzaddikim stories where their sin is we try to minimize the blame to them. So this is kind of taking the blame off of him. It wasn't really his fault. He threw it in the fire. And because the Erev Rav's magic, this kind of just occurred. So thank you, Annie, for bringing up that Midrash as well. And I don't see any other questions, but thank you, Debbie, for he's non-confrontational. Very good language. Excellent. That's exactly how I would describe Aaron and maybe a good definition of Ohev Shalom Rodev Shalom. Non-confrontational. He doesn't like to have fights. Anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure for learning with all of you tonight. And I thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Kalman, for inviting me once again.
Thank you. Thank you for the share.